Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
Should the Boston Marathon bomber get life or death? Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist and your terrorist therapist. Well, some of you may be wondering, why are we talking about the Boston Marathon bomber? It seemed like that was all done and taken care of. His trial was he was convicted in 2015, and the Boston Marathon bombing was on April 15th, 2013. The bomber that we're talking about is Johar Tsarnaev, the younger brother. He was 19 years old at the time of the bombing. And why is he in the news again? Perhaps you heard about it. If you did, it was just a mere blip in the news. And this was a very fascinating trial, and he is a very fascinating guy when you really look into his background. At the time, he was kind of, now I don't want you to think that I'm necessarily, feeling sorry for him, although I guess to some degree I am, but he was a terrorist. and he did participate in the bombing that killed three people and injured more than 260. So this was the second worst terror attack since 9/11. So obviously, and he is incarcerated in Colorado in a maximum security prison. And that's not going to change. But the news is that a U.S. Court of Appeals has just overturned the death sentence for him and has ordered a new penalty phase trial. So they vacated the death sentence on counts 4, 5, 9, 10, and 14. And they remanded the case back to the district court with directions to hold a new penalty phase trial. So this is the question we're going to be looking at today. Should he get life or death? Should he, in other words, keep right now, death was taken off the table. So should he keep the life sentences? He has more than one life sentence. He's not getting out. Should he keep those? Or should they have another trial, a death penalty trial, and should he get the death penalty again? Now, there are various reasons why one might think one or the other. In order to get the death penalty again, he would have to have this trial. And so that he would be convicted, or sentenced to the death penalty again, at least once. And so why would that be the right thing to do? Well, one, because he's a terrorist. There was no question that he had terrorist motives. Secondly, as I said, it was the second worst attack after 9/11. He killed three people and injured more than 260. It was a major attack. And if he got the death penalty, he would have no more enjoyment of life to the extent that one can enjoy it in a maximum security prison. He still has the gift of life, whatever that entails. And for him, that includes actually having women who are, fans of his, sending him love letters and being they came to his trial. There were lots of women who were very attracted to him. So, you know, there's some pleasure in his life, even being in a maximum security prison. He can do different activities. He can write. He can do various things. Okay. So that would be, you know, so taking, does he deserve that? Does he deserve the benefits of being alive? So if you don't think so, then yes, we should have another trial and for the penalty phase, and he should be convicted yet again, at least once, of getting the death penalty. Now, what about not giving him the death penalty? That could happen if the prosecutors just agree to not have another trial and to just go along with the current convictions and sentences. And again, the court, the U.S. Court of Appeals, made it very clear that even though they overturned the death sentence, there's no way that he is going to get out of the prison. So why might there be a reason to not pursue the death penalty again and to just leave it as is, just life in prison, several life in prison sentences? Well, for one thing, it was his older brother who was the mastermind. Giving him a death sentence would give him martyr status as a terrorist. Having another trial to try to reinstate the death penalty would mean that it would open the wounds of people, the victims and their families of the bombing. And it would be very painful for them, and some of them would have to testify again. And the bomber would get publicity again, you know, which also is used by Al-Qaeda and ISIS and other terrorist organizations to try to promote terrorism, to promote lone wolves, to follow what he did. So there are reasons pro and con for having a new trial, a new penalty phase trial. So while, you know, as I continue talking about things, reminding you about the attack and about who he was particularly, you can think about these things and what you would do if you were a prosecutor and it was up to you to decide whether you wanted to bring another trial in order to pursue the death penalty again or not. So let's look at why it was overturned, why the death penalties for those counts were overturned. Johar's attorneys appealed to this First Circuit Court of Appeals in December 2019. Now, I don't know about you, but I didn't hear about that at that time. Just heard about it now. It's all been kind of quiet. But anyhow, they said that the death penalty should be thrown out because he didn't receive a fair trial. And they mentioned a number of things that actually, you know, that worked, that proved to the Court of Appeals that in fact he didn't receive a fair trial. So one of the things that they said was that it should never have been in Boston. And in fact, at the time of the trial in 2015, they did make that case. They did make a motion, you know, for why it shouldn't be, the trial shouldn't be held in Boston, especially it was held downtown. It was held right near where the actual bombing was. So needless to say, I mean, all of Boston and really all of America was distraught at this bombing. And how could it not influence the jurors? Well, I mean, you could say, well, you know, where in Massachusetts could the trial be held that it wouldn't influence them? All of Massachusetts certainly was very much impacted emotionally by the bombing. But being in the center of Boston, right near where the bombing took place, was of course the worst place that it could be held. Now, the other part, another reason why his attorneys argued that this wasn't a fair trial, was that the judge didn't allow evidence in about his brother. His brother, his older brother, Tamerlan, who was really the mastermind, and that was part of the defense for Johar, was that it was really his brother. And I'm going to tell you something about the family, and you will see that had Johar been left to his own devices, it is very unlikely that he would have done, certainly not the Boston Marathon attack, and even questionable as to whether he would have done any attack. So we'll talk about that a little later. But the brother actually had been on a watch list, or it was kind of, it's very muddy waters in terms of just how much the Soviet Union reported about him, or Chechnya, you know, how much information they gave to U.S. counterterrorism authorities. But there was enough that had been communicated, or enough. There was also a question about whether the brother had been involved in a murder. And so these kinds of things were not allowed into the trial of Johar. And as part of his attorneys wanting to prove that it was really the older brother who was the mastermind and all of the bad things that the older brother did. So that was another thing. But most importantly, probably what the Court of Appeals may have considered most offensive that the judge in the original trial didn't do was to question the jurors better, more in depth, to show that really they were biased before the trial began. Now, Johar's attorneys didn't win the motion to move the trial out of Boston, the judge had said that he was going to do an even greater in-depth questioning of the jurors than he would have done in a normal case, to make doubly sure that the jurors were not biased, because it was being held in Boston, in the center, near the site of the attack. And in fact, what happened was he didn't. And when we come back, I'm going to talk to you about some really outrageous social media posts two of the jurors posted, and who denied this in the questioning, who wanted to be on the jury, and really wanted to be on the jury because they already had made up their mind and wanted to make sure that Johar was going to get not only convicted, but presumably going to get the death penalty. So when we come back, we'll talk more about these two jurors. One of them was became the foreperson, and what they were writing on social media. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking today about the the Boston Marathon bombing, with the question, should the Boston Marathon bomber, meaning Johar Tsarnaev, the younger brother, should he get life or death? This question is being asked again, even though he was convicted and sentenced in 2015, because an appeals court just overturned the charges for which he got the death penalty. So I'm asking you to put yourself in the place of a prosecutor and decide whether you would want to have another trial and try to get the death penalties reinstated, or whether you would just go along with keeping the several sentences of life in prison for which he would never get out anyway. So the interesting part is that, and that's where we left off, it's so interesting that now Twitter posts and other social media posts need to be considered. You know, when you do voir dire before a trial starts, and as you know, probably if you've been listening to other podcasts of mine, I sometimes mention that my day job is as a forensic psychiatrist and expert witness. So I find all of this particularly interesting. And when you do voir dire at the beginning, that's when you ask the attorneys on both sides get a chance to ask the jury questions, because you are trying to root out any juror who might be biased against your client if you're the defense attorney. I mean, depending upon which sides you're on, you want to try to find jurors, of course, who are going to be more sympathetic to your side rather than the opposing side. So, and they have to, jurors have to fill out, or potential jurors have to fill out forms where they ask about, you know, different things about their life that could potentially provide bias. And then also they are asked questions in open court as well, or not necessarily open, but in court, face to face. So as I was starting to say, it turned out that two jurors, at least, were biased. And they had proof of this when they made the appeal, because there were posts, you know, they had the actual posts from social media. And so one of the jurors who went on to become the jury foreperson had published 24 tweets in the wake of the bombings. One post after this brother's, younger brother's capture called him a, quote, piece of garbage. She said that she was locked down, quote unquote, locked down with her family during the manhunt, and retweeted another post calling him a piece of garbage. And later she told the court that she hadn't commented on the case or been asked to shelter in place. So she lied. Bottom line, she lied. And, you know, so why do jurors lie? Well, I mean, this was a very high profile case. It was an exciting case. Clearly this juror had, you know, she had already made up her mind about him, and she wanted to be on the jury and wanted to be foreperson to be able to direct the results of the trial very strongly against him, clearly being on the side of the death penalty. Then also a juror on the day of his sentencing, a juror changed her Facebook profile picture to a picture that said Boston Strong, which had been the rallying cry that was used after the bombing. So, you know, the appeals, the attorneys for Johar had asked the appeals court, or showed all this to the appeals court, and said that the judge of the original trial should have asked deeper questions, you know, either should have dismissed these jurors, you know, and should have at least asked them follow-up questions after these posts came to light. So, you know, this was fairly convincing evidence that he had received an unfair trial, and that is why we are where we are right now. So, but what this means for trials in general is that it's not enough to ask potential jurors, what newspapers do you read, what television shows do you watch, you know, to see whether they were biased, but also to ask them about their social media presence. What blogs do you look at? What posts have you written? You know, these are things now that defense attorneys and prosecutors have to pay attention to, which really, you know, I mean, in a way it's good, because it's evidence. If it's still there, if they haven't deleted their posts, you know, and it's still there, then it's very helpful to show the bias of potential jurors. But if they, certainly they could have deleted them, or in the future, jurors can delete them if they have a certain axe to grind. So the appeals court decided that they were going to reverse convictions on charges that Johar was carrying a firearm in connection with his possession of a pressure cooker bomber. And just to remind you, Johar was 19 at the time that he and his brother Tamerlan, who was 26, went to the finish line of the Boston Marathon on April 15, 2013, as I said. And remember, there was video, you know, we watched that video many times, right? Showing the brothers carrying the pressure cooker bombers in backpacks. And Tamerlan first set off a bomb. It was a pressure cooker that contained gunpowder and nails and BBs. And that bomb killed Campbell, a 29-year-old restaurant manager, and permanently injured several other people who lost their legs. Then Johar was carrying the second pressure cooker bomber that went off 12 seconds later and killed two people, a little boy, an 8-year-old boy, and Martin Richard, and a girl, a graduate student from China named Lingzi Liu. Tamerlan's bomb killed Christy Campbell. So clearly, I mean, it's amazing that only three people were killed, but obviously devastating for the families of these three people. But as I said, more than 260 people were injured. So this was a major, major terrorist attack. So now, what do we know about Johar? He was basically, one of the things that's interesting about him is that he is an example of other people who become terrorists. people who come to the United States with looking at the planning to go for the American dream, looking at this as the land of opportunity, you know, not coming here with the idea of becoming a terrorist, and then having one disappointment after the other, and ultimately being easy to influence, to radicalize. And that, unfortunately, I mean, his story is really kind of the classic story of a terrorist that this happens to. He came to the United States with his family, he and his parents came to the United States. He was of Chechen descent. He moved to Russia with his family when he was 8 years old. Then he came to the United States. And he, ironically, he came to the United States on a tourist visa, and then his family claimed asylum during their stay in 2002. And he became a naturalized United States citizen on September 11th, 2012. There's irony for you. And he actually, whereas the older brother was always kind of seen to have problems, the older brother and two of the sisters of the family were left in the Soviet Union or in that area when the parents came with Johar originally. And so the older brother never quite fit in, even though when the older brother came, he did excel in boxing. And his dream was to become an Olympic boxer, and he wanted to fight for the United States. I mean, he wanted to represent the United States in the Olympics. And various things happened that that dream was quashed. And that was when he turned against the United States. And he was always the biggest influence on his younger brother, on Johar. In fact, you know, a teacher, a coach said that Johar followed after his older brother like a little puppy dog. Well, when we come back, I will tell you more about the family. It's a very, very, very dysfunctional family, really, that had something to do with where they came from. But really, it could have been an American, a native-born American dysfunctional family. I mean, the same kinds of problems happen in people who are born in America. So, I mean, yes, were there additional problems coming as an immigrant? Yes, of course. But some of the problems, as you will hear, are things that happen to American families who started off being born in America. So stay tuned. And welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking today about, should the Boston Marathon bomber get life or death? Talking about how his death sentences were just overturned. And the question is, are prosecutors going to have a retrial for the penalty phase and try to get the death sentences, or a death sentence, at least you only need one, try to get one through a new trial? So, you know, as I was starting to say, it's really, his life is really fascinating. We're talking about the younger brother, Johar, who was 19 at the time of the Boston Marathon bombing, under the influence of his older brother, Tamerlan, who was 26. And, you know, so there are things in his background, and I'm going to give you some highlights, but there are things in his background that would really make you feel kind of sorry for him and make you think, oh, well, he wouldn't have become a terrorist, or he wouldn't have done a bombing like that were he not under his older brother's influence. And I actually think that that's true, but, you know, he wasn't, it's not that he didn't have any, terrorist thoughts or any, it's not that he was, you know, completely innocent and he would have gone on to, I don't know what, rescue puppies or something if they hadn't done the bombing. But in fact, when during questioning, and at first he wasn't read his Miranda rights, there were a number of things that kind of weren't right, really, in his capture and his trial. Oh, and by the way, in case, just to remind you, his older brother was killed during the manhunt. And one of the things that's really interesting about that is the question as to how the older brother was killed, whether it was the police, or whether it was, there were gunshots from the police, but then also the evidence showed that Johar, in trying to escape from the ambush that the police, where the police attacked them, his brother got shot, the older brother got shot, and Johar got back in the car and drove over his brother, which is really fascinating from a psychiatric point of view. I think yes, you could say, oh, well, he just wanted to get away. He was trying to save his own butt, save his own skin, and it was too late to help his brother, and so he just got away. But, and maybe that's true, but also unconsciously, at the very least, did he resent his brother for ruining his dream? For ruining Johar's dream, for changing, and I'll tell you how the brother changed after the brother's dream was squashed. Does Johar blame his brother for getting them into this mess, for getting him, indoctrinating him into terrorist beliefs, and getting him to go along with this Boston Marathon plot? I think the answer to that is yes. Consciously or unconsciously, yes, he was purposely running over his brother, or unconsciously running over his brother. Anyhow, one of the things that Johar, so that's why we're not talking about the older brother. He was gone from the picture early on during the manhunt. So Johar told, when after he was caught, he told, during questioning, he told the authorities that he and his brother next planned to detonate explosives in Times Square. So they had a whole plan going on. You know, this wasn't just the Boston Marathon. So it's a good thing they were caught for many reasons. Now, in 2002, when Johar was nine, the Tsarnaev parents and Johar came to the United States on a 90-day tourist visa, and then the father applied for asylum, citing his fears of persecution back in his ties, because of his ties to Chechnya. And he got asylum, and then they brought over the rest of the family. And so again, as I was saying earlier, the family had, you know, were planning to go after the American dream, but it wasn't so easy. They were constantly, you know, on the verge of poverty. In fact, they did receive welfare benefits for much of the time. The father worked as a backyard mechanic. The mother worked as a cosmetologist, but then she lost her job because she eventually, as she got more into the religion, becoming more radical, she refused to work in a business that served men. And so she started, she worked as a cosmetologist at their home. And then, you know, the friends, so as I was saying, the older brother, you know, would never quite fit in. Fortunately, he did have this talent as a boxer, and he did really rise within the ranks. And that's why it was possible that he could have gone to the Olympics. I mean, that wasn't unrealistic for the older brother to think that he could have made the Olympics, and he wanted to be a be on the team of the U.S. But he wasn't very likable, and he was really always an outcast. And at some point, somebody reported him to the authorities in boxing and said that he had problems, you know, and as I was mentioning before about that there were these questions from his about his background and about his politics and you know, whether he could have some terrorist leanings, or I don't know, just from mainly from where he came from, there were just questions. And even though it wasn't clear whether he was ever ever actually on a formal watch list, but there were certainly questions about him. And at the time that this came up, the Boxing League had said that you know, for the Olympics, that you had to have been born in America. So, or at least be a citizen, and the older brother's citizenship was held up because of these questions about his background. But anyhow, going back to the younger brother, Johar, everybody liked him. He was very popular. And in fact, when the Boston bombing happened, and some people started, you know, watching the videos on television, and some people started mentioning that that guy in the video looks like Johar, and they were saying, "Oh no, it couldn't have been Johar, because there was no way that he ever gave the impression that he would have done something like that." And in fact, some of his friends went to his apartment while the manhunt was going on, and they found things that would have implicated him, and they took them out, and they tried to hide them. They tried to protect him. That's how well-liked he was. And he was, Johar was a wrestler. He did very well in wrestling, and he got a scholarship to college, but he wasn't doing so well in college. This was at the University of Massachusetts, Dartmouth. So at the time of the bombings, that they went ahead with the bombings, he was basically flunking out of school, and he didn't have any money. He owed $20,000 to the college. His brother, older brother, had gotten married by that point, but he wasn't working anymore, the older brother. His wife was supporting him. And he, both because of his, oh, and at some point before the bombing, His parents got divorced. Their parents got divorced, and they went back to Chechnya or the Soviet Union, and so they weren't around. And his mother, at a certain time, their mother was kind of a character. She was she became very Americanized. She would go around in high heels and she was a cosmetologist, so makeup was important to her and so on. And she was at some point she started getting into becoming radicalized. And the older brother had met a friend who was radicalizing him. And the mother favored the older brother. So nobody was really there. And the father had gone back to the old country. And nobody was really there anymore for Johar, except all his friends. And he was very good in wrestling. And he wished that he had continued working in that. The mother wore stylish jeans, high heels, and short skirts. And she had tattooed eyebrows, permanent makeup, very glamorous. And early on in their life, people who knew them said that they were a very cuddly family, that there was a lot of love and it was a very, very good family. But as things got harder, as it was harder to make money, as they had to be on public assistance for a long time, as even that was making it hard. And then at the end, right before they perpetrated the attack, his brother lost his, he was, Johar, when he wasn't at college, would live with his brother and the brother's wife, and they had a baby. And but they lost their Section 8 housing, and so they were going to have to move from the home that the family had lived in since they came to America. It was a small home, you know, but it was their home, and now they had to move. So the younger brother, Johar, had planned on he wanted to either be an engineer or a dentist, kind of seems, or a nurse. He had different aspirations, but college turned out to be harder than he'd expected. He didn't like the college that he was at. He had to leave his friends behind. That it was in a different area, and he had to leave all his friends behind while he was at school. So he was basically lost. The younger brother was lost, while the older brother had become radicalized. The parents were back in the old country, and Johar was feeling like he had nothing left to lose, like his dreams were squashed, just like the older brother's dreams were squashed, and just like his parents' dreams were squashed. Now, I am not saying that, they could have gotten other dreams, I'm not saying that it's anybody's fault other than themselves, but this is the kind of thing that happens and that makes people then start thinking about, as these two brothers did, what the United States was doing in the Middle East. And, you know, it is true. I mean, I know there are going to be some of you thinking, what? She is feeling sorry for this guy who killed three people and injured over 260 of them. It's not that I'm feeling sorry for him, but I think that we can learn from this. The danger signs, the warning signs, and maybe reach out to people before they are in a vulnerable position to be radicalized. So you decide, if you were a prosecutor, would you go for the death penalty or would you be satisfied with life in prison? Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
If you would like to find out more about terrorism from me, your terrorist therapist, visit my website, terroristtherapist.com. And if you're a parent or teacher and want to build stronger nests for your kids to become more resilient, check out my new award-winning book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's the first and only book about terrorism for kids. You can find it wherever books are sold or directly from the publisher at terrorismforkids.com. Terrorism, the number 4, kids.com. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. We hope listening to the show has made you feel calmer, more resilient, and more able to reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. You can also check out past shows on Renegade Talk Archives for more insights.